my opinion now, I was much too tolerant about this kind of frustration. I was willing to do a boring topic as long as it was like technically interesting or business-wise interesting. I shouldn't have done that. I should have just said, Ben, what can you not shut up about?
You are a driven international professional or manager, have achieved quite a bit already, but are asking yourself from time to time, what do I really want? How do I want to work and live? Then this is your podcast. I am Gina Friedrich, career and life coach for people who want to actively shape their future. Every second Thursday, I release interviews for you with inspiring, successful, as well as renowned international personalities from the world of business, NGO, and sports. They all will share with you what these questions mean to them, how they handled obstacles in their lives, and shaped their journey to where they are today. You are curious and don't want to miss anything? Sign up for this podcast right here. And now, let yourself be inspired on your very personal journey towards the future that you wish for. Hi, thank you for tuning in to episode number 47 with Ben Zuffiani. Ben is based in Cologne, and nerdy marketing is what the founder of Pirate Skills and seven other companies calls his passion. He studied psychology and, with his latest company, focuses on growth marketing. In this interview, Ben shares his journey that made him quit his Air Force job, study psychology and found eight companies to date, and how the idea of lifestyle design helped him to shape it. Hear how he describes these phases with peeling an onion, as with every project he got deeper and deeper to his core. We discuss if following one's own passion is the right approach and what role his called frustration meter played on his journey. Why his approach requires saying no to upcoming business opportunities, how this results in accepting slower growth, and what his current challenge is. This and much more Ben talks about in this episode. Ready? Here we go. Ben, I am super happy to have you here on board for this podcast today.
Thank you very much, Gina.
I actually got the chance, I think it was February, right, where I met you on the Business Factory Masterclass weekend in Cologne, where I got the chance to follow your input for one whole day. And I am super happy that we kept in touch and that you said yes to this request.
Yes, that was such a fun event. It was from the Business Factory, from Gedankentanken, which is now called Greater. That was a really fun event, and I had the chance to speak there and to talk about content marketing and storytelling in depth. And this is where I got to meet you along 20, 30 other of the fellow participants of this program.
With all my mind blockages and so on, but we might get there later. But yeah, it was a very inspiring weekend, although I still feel like there's a lot of homework for me to do on the end that you actually spoke about, which was around content creation or social media, growth marketing and so on. But before we get to that and talk a bit about your expertise as well, I was just wondering if I would get the chance to meet you spontaneously on a Saturday afternoon in Cologne, which is where you're based, and I'm sitting on the table beside you, and we would, I mean, if we would not know each other yet, we would start a talk and chat. What would you say? What would be the first thing you would tell me about yourself?
I think I would tell you that I'm a founder, and because that is so very dear to my heart. I would say I'm a founder of Pirate Skills. I'm super passionate about nerdy marketing. I would say that I'm a husband and a father of two little girls called Noelle and Emma, who I'm super proud of. That I'm a book nerd, very much so. I spend a lot of time reading, and I need a lot of time alone for myself, and I really enjoy just having this talk with you at the table, just one-on-one.
Yeah, that's nice to know. And what would be the topic that you would probably talk to me about?
So I have the really great situation that I build a company about the topic I love the most, and that is a very conscious choice. So knowing who you are, what you're interested in, I would honestly love to talk about with you most how to maybe reach a broader audience, make a deeper connection, how to build your passion into a business that is sustainable for you as a founder, how to build a team that is strong and supports you. That is really at the core of what I love to talk about most in a business setting. Yeah.
Okay, so the good thing is that I could ask you so many questions in regard to this if I would have the chance I actually have the chance now to ask you all of these questions that I might have. My God. See, I'm nervous as well.
I used to host a podcast, and this was my favorite part, the Growth Arctic podcast. And the chance to just sit down with somebody and talk 1 or 2 hours, and I can ask them anything I like.
Yeah.
That was so interesting. Yeah.
I agree. So that's me today, just to be sure that you're not asking back too much. No, of course, you can ask any question you want. But I would be curious if you heard about the topic of my podcast, which is around the question of what is my path? How do I really want to work and live? What was your first thought that you had?
I was very much reminded with several discussions I have with friends and fellow entrepreneurs. The discussion, like passion, to follow your passion or not, mm-hmm. is that something one should do? Is it a good recommendation? Is it a really bad recommendation? I was very interested what your opinion is on that, and what the people you're interviewing think about this question. Should you follow your passion in order to do what you really want to do? Or should you take a different approach, like Cal Newport would suggest in his book, So Good They Can't Ignore You? Yeah, mm-hmm. which I'm much more in the camp of. So that was an interesting start of a thought mm-hmm. for me.
Yeah, I think in general, it is super important to at least be aware of what it really is that drives you, right? To know what your passion is and where it lies in. And then more and more finding out how you actually could do more of what it is that drives you. Like also knowing your strength, knowing your core values, and then trying to figure out what the steps could be. I mean, it's not like you don't have to quit whatever it is that you do to have this complete change. You could also have like step by step increasing what it is that that you love to do and what is like what people call a passion. But you could, of course, also have like this cut like I had it a couple of times in the past. But I think it's very individual to really identify what your individual path is, right? So there is not this one recipe that suits all. I think it's very important to do this deep dive, to do a reflection on what it actually is and what that means to you or to anyone who's asking themselves that question, and then see what that means for the actual situation or the next step, for the next adventure they might be seeking for. Or also, sometimes it happens that it's just like a reconfirmation that wherever this person is currently is actually a good fit. So, and there is also a big difference between this professional passion and also stuff that you can actually cater in your personal private time, right? So it's not always just related to professional aspects. So that's also like a very interesting exercise that I support people on when they are in my coaching office. So a very good question. If you have any more, let me know. Was that answering your question for now?
Yeah. For now, it was just to follow up on that. It was the difficulty from that question that I really studied the arguments from multiple sides, like the Cal Newports, the Tim Ferrisses, the old school philosophers mm-hmm. like Kant and Aristotle. And they have really good arguments for many ways to go about this question. And I would love to go into that later. Maybe we make it a bit more practical and concrete before we dive into the philosophy behind it.
Yeah, cool. And I think in general, it depends on what you want, right? But the real potential of a person, I think, lies in what it really is that drives him or her. So like really understanding the key strength, like the natural ways of thinking, feeling and doing things where you're able to reach a certain or like to leverage your potential more than if you're not aware of them and if you're not trying to do more of that. So there's also a close link, but enough of that. So this is your mm-hmm. slot and this should be about you. And you've just mentioned that You have founded your own business, and it's actually already the second company that you founded. But I'm wondering, what was the biggest aha moment that brought you closer to answer the question of what your path actually is?
Yeah. So I used to think that I want to become a professor. I don't know. I always was passionate about education. I was pretty sure I don't want to become a teacher for school. I used to be really good in school, but I never liked the system. I was really, I had very different friends, and also in the family, people who had a really hard time at school. And being able to see this in contrast and what the school system is valuing and whatnot, I was definitely sure I'm not going to be part of this system. So I always thought I'm going to be a professor. I was going to study like physics and psychology and philosophy in Heidelberg. But then, I don't know, this path, I got this passionate about the path of academia, especially when I then later, after a little dive of 4 years as an apprentice Air Force officer here in Germany, mm-hmm. When I really realized, no, academia is a bubble. I don't want to be part of that either. I really need to do something I need to gather skills that enable me to change the world in a meaningful way. And that I need those skills in order so that I have the freedom to do what I really want to do. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that was a bit of my journey. So, but it was not easy to think about it in the past. I had the opportunity to be a year abroad in the USA when I was like 17 years old, which was a godsend of stepping out of the framework that we are all used to. Yeah, most people are looking towards the people that are already surrounded by. And if you have to live somewhere else for a year, then you are forced to look at completely different perspectives and different opportunities. And this is where I cut the idea of becoming like a university teacher, and where I thought, okay, it needs to be science or economy, yeah, something in that direction. Mm-hmm. But stepping out of your normal surroundings, that was an absolute godsend that I could not have figured out with 16, 17, yeah, because I was in my own bubble and I mm-hmm. needed to break out, but I didn't know at the point. Only looking backwards, it made total sense. And then I got hit by the 4-hour work week. I don't know if somebody else talked about this before.
Not yet. Very interesting topic.
Yeah, it's a book by Tim Ferriss. And it's essentially, it's not literally meant work only 4 hours. It was designing your lifestyle in a way that you could do the mandatory work in the least amount of time possible, so you have the time to do whatever you like. Mm-hmm. Yeah? And he also has great suggestions on how to go about that last part, figuring out what you really like. So Tim Ferriss hit me right in the year when this book was published, which is more than 10 years ago now. And this sent me on this journey of lifestyle design. And I love this word. Lifestyle design.
I've never heard it before.
I think he really brought it to the surface of people. If you Google it, there's definitely a big niche of people who are very interested in this thought. And the idea behind it, and I completely followed it since then, was that you as a person are completely able to design your life in a way that suits you more and more and more. Yeah, you have more limitations in the beginning because you might lack some education, you might lack core skills, you might not have the desired skills in the marketplace, you might not yet have a company or a job that you really feel like you're in a fish in water. Yeah, mm-hmm. But the goal is definitely to create this situation. And from then on, I quit the Air Force. Yeah, I said, no, that's not the place where I'm going to stay for the next 8 to 20 years. I'm going to study something that I'm really interested in, which was psychology in a city in Germany called Bochum. And from then, I just founded companies. And pirate skills is not my second. it's like my eighth company.
Oh my God. Okay. On LinkedIn. I couldn't.
Yeah, on LinkedIn. there's my umbrella company, Sixfold, and then there's Pirate Skills. But I have so many good and bad projects within that company, yeah, that are really own startups within itself. It was just a legal umbrella that I used. And Pirate Skills, I would really consider my eighth company, which should tell you, I'm 38 now, that I started doing this when I was 25. So school, 4 years Air Force, psychology, 1 year later, I just started founding one company after another that I tanked like 6 out of 8. One I sold, one I'm still working in. Yeah. Two I left happily. Yeah. Four I just tanked. And yeah, that taught me so much about it.
Wow, Ben, this is super impressive. And I didn't know that yet. And I was just wondering, because you said you've tanked 6 out of 8. I can imagine that is like, yeah, a very interesting and maybe even super important experience in order to then found the next company and the next. So maybe there's something you can tell us about what that meant to you, actually deciding to accept that it didn't work out and that you have had to stop running these companies and starting off with something new.
Yeah. So it taught me very much to not get too attached, for example, to one specific project. Yeah, but to me it's like peeling an onion. The next project was always deeper to my core. And I just could not have known in the beginning what the right company was for me. So I started with random websites about topics that I wasn't really interested in, but that had a market. Yeah, like seriously, my first website was about orchid care. Can you imagine that?
I am surprised.
Yeah, so I have a website about orchid care because my brother liked to write, was a good orchid caregiver, and I liked the tech, the website building, and the marketing and the SEO around it. And so it was an advertising and affiliate business. And once it made like 500 euros a month, we were like, okay, what if we do this 10 times? Then we have a real business. But and then we kept on building those kinds of projects. And those were really about strange topics, like from skincare to losing weight to drones. Drones was at least interesting to me. I learned very much about marketing, about the IT infrastructure behind website and app software projects. But I always thought I'm passionate about the business and not about the topic itself. And only once I realized that when I combine both sides, a business model I'm excited to build as an entrepreneur, about a core audience I love with a topic I cannot shut up about. That was the gold. But it took me 7 companies to get there. And after like company 3, you're not so anxious about, oh my God, what if I fail? It's no problem. It's something more like you give away. It's not like they completely tanked, but I gave them to somebody who could do more of it. And maybe sometimes I got some money for it, sometimes I didn't. Recently, I shut down an app with over 1 million downloads.
Oof.
Yeah, all the projects before the app business was always non-funded completely. I invest my time and my knowledge, and I get a return of investment on that time. And then I thought, oh, websites, they are so 1990. Let's do apps. And I was really looking for a company, an agency was willing to start building their own apps. But when I moved to Cologne, I got married. Yeah, my wife and I, we made a very conscious decision to move away from Dortmund to a city we would love for the next 5 to 10 years. And we looked at apartments already in Berlin, Munich and Cologne, and we made a very conscious decision to move to Cologne because of the lifestyle design choices I made. I knew Munich is no good culture fit for me. I lived there for 3 years before. Berlin is good for startups, but it's way too much hype. Yeah, too busy, too loud. And Cologne is a center for people who are very open-minded. There's a huge personal development community in Cologne, which I personally really love. And I knew there are enough people and enough businesses so that I could build anything I would like. I don't need to be in Berlin. And then I forced myself, and that was a key choice, I had a couple of businesses that kept me afloat, like the website stuff. Yeah, I had a couple of those websites. And I could freelance on the side because I could create websites, and those people were pretty sought after. And I forced myself for at least half a year to not make a commitment to one big startup idea or to one team. And to look around, to study the landscape, to look who feels good, which co-working space, for example, feels good to live in and which mm-hmm. doesn't. And then I found those guys that I did the app business with. And then a lot of stuff changed, and it was really like a big level up experience.
Yeah, thanks for sharing these insights with us. I was just, there were actually two questions. So cheers. I hope it's champagne or something.
It's rum, of course. I'm a fan.
Ooh, yeah, true. What time is it? It's evening here already, so that's fine. So back to the interview. Sorry, now I'm smiling. You were just talking about these experiences that you actually called failure yourself. What helped you throughout these phases where you actually had to make it through a phase, accepting that something didn't go as well as you were expecting it to?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, I love that question. Frustration helped a lot. So my internal frustration, I think it is a great measurement of should you look for something else. Yeah, there is a balance between giving up too early, but also being aware of your internal frustration meter. And it's maybe not only frustration, but like dissatisfaction. I was very often at the end of such projects, I was bored. I was like, no, this is not the final thing. This is not what I'm meant to do. Yeah, and this could be bigger. Maybe I lost control over this project. I need to start something new that could regain control and start reshaping the company more in a way that would make me feel like a fish in water. Yeah, mm-hmm. As I mentioned before, again, this lifestyle design thinking. So really being in tune with your inner frustration and not tolerating it too much. In the beginning, when I started my first businesses or freelance jobs, in contrast to today, in my opinion now, I was much too tolerant about this kind of frustration. I was willing to do a boring topic as long as it was like technically interesting or business-wise interesting. I shouldn't have done that. I should have just said, Ben, what can you not shut up about? What is a business model you would really love to try? And what is a community you would really like to serve? And just finding something that fits those criteria. And voila, I would have cut 5 years short of my journey.
And going back to the question that you have asked me earlier, where it was like, what is key? Is it the passion? What would you say now? What came first? Was it like the screening of the market to then understand what market you would like to serve with a service or product? Or would you say you then started focusing on your passion first and then taking the next step from there?
Yeah, very difficult one. Yeah, because you can give very quickly wrong advice to people. So let me.
But this is not about advice. This is really your experience. So, don't worry too much about her.
Two experiences I made. When I looked at the market first, like the orchid business, or the drone business, there was an obvious niche with low competition. And in case of the drones, it was a good trend. it was relatively easy to build a business in that niche. It it was able to sustain me more quickly. And it was a training ground for me. So if in the very beginning to go and solve a problem of a market that already exists, that's the easier way to go. Mm-hmm. Later, once I already had the skills necessary to survive in whatever niche, I got more and more focused on what I think my purpose is and what I should do, not only for me, like from the completely egoistical point of view, but from this, who am I meant to serve and am I happy in that service? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I always like to combine this. What would I really love to do in combination of who would I love to serve with that particular skill set that I'm going to build? Then I started to focus like later much more and more on what I am passionate about. Yeah, in this case right now, it is nerdy marketing. And I call it consciously nerdy marketing because it's like everything else sounds so pretentious, yeah? Like omnichannel marketing, growth hacking, whatever. Yeah, I just like marketing that is a slight bit technical. It has a good touch of psychology in it. And that is driven by business goals. Yeah, so that's the sweet spot where I feel so happy in, yeah, to talk about. And I'm very stringent that I do not get off course. Whenever I have opportunities that where I feel that leads me off course, I just say very strictly no to it. And I get a lot of opportunities. There are at least once a month somebody who wants to start a business with me, at least once a month. And to say no to that and to stick to something that grows slower, maybe, that is not funded. Yeah, that was absolute key. And to say no to big opportunities. I told you the app company was the first not bootstrapped company. So in the startup world, bootstrapping means you pay everything out of your own pocket. Mm-hmm. Yeah, a funded startup is you get an investor. In this case, we got a low seven-figure investment, and that investor paid our developers and our own salaries and the advertising and everything, right? Mm-hmm. But there is such a different expectation when you are out of control, when the control lies now with the person with the money. Yeah. And I needed to make that experience what a funded startup feels like in order for me to know that's definitely not my game. Yeah. I have a great need for control, and I'm not ashamed to say it. It was a process of getting to know myself, yeah, and to be honest with me,
To figure out what it not is, or what would actually not be the right way for you, or what it is that you don't want to have your company or your professional life shaped like being so dependent on others and
on an employer, on an investor, on a co-founder. And to also feel like now I maxed out my independence. Yeah, but as in child psychology, you have like these three phases of dependence. Yeah, a small child totally dependent on the parents. Independence, that is like, they can now pay their stuff. And then interdependence, they are now able to serve a greater cause and be part of something, but based out of its own independence. And now I'm on this move. I got my independence, but now the question is, am I not willing to serve a bigger purpose and also to give up some of that independence in order to serve that bigger purpose? That is the phase I'm in right now.
Wow, that really sounds like a big question, right? I can only imagine that this, especially with the experience that you've just shared with us, that this is a challenging question for you.
Yeah. Definitely, and I'm wondering what the result is going to be, and what the question after that is going to be. And sometimes you not only make progress forward, you regress, or you think a regression happened, but it was actually a move into a different direction. And so I'm always super curious and excited, like, oh God, where's life going to lead me?
Yeah.
I would have never thought at 30 that I'm married, that I have two little girls with 2 and 5 years old, that I have a company with 3 employees that makes me very happy. Yeah. I wouldn't never have thought it with 30. I would be thinking, okay, I'm still studying something in university with 38.
Yeah, that's, how do you say life happens while we are making plans, or there's a saying like this. Yeah, super interesting. And I don't know if you already can share or if you want to share with us what actually is something that helps you along the way now in this decision-making process. You don't need to talk about details, but just more, what are some factors or some sources or some, maybe it's someone, maybe it's something that helps you, to actively shape this decision in a way that suits you.
Mm-hmm. On the one hand, it's definitely introspection. I love journaling. As a nerd, I prefer to do it on my iPad, do it wherever you like, but the habit of writing regularly to chew through ideas, perspectives, that helps me immensely. Because it's very hard to shut out the ideas from the outside, the expectations that the society is having towards us, no matter which niche you're in. Even in the startup niche, there are certain expectations on how to behave and what to do, what is respectable, what not. For example, for me, not building a company that might be worth 100 million euro, that is something that is looked down upon in the startup community. Yeah, if you're only building something that might be worth a million, that is looked down upon. That is a small business, not newsworthy at all.
Yeah. A different
completely
world.
Not newsworthy. A completely different world. And to stay away from that, to not get triggered by it, and to introspect and to see, okay, maybe at some later point I might be interesting, but for now, please leave me alone with these kinds of expectations. Not external, but what actually reaches me. Mm-hmm. So that is the first part. Introspection, journaling. Best thing ever. Reading. Reading and getting perspective. For example, when I know that I'm drifting too far into one direction, I look for a book that roots for the opposite side. For example, right now, in order to get a bit off that high scale startup vibe, I read The Company of One. Yeah, it's a book from an author that highly suggests the value of having a company where you're only one person and maybe some freelancers who help you, and how to organize yourself and what's the value of that, that you can have much more deeper customer relationships, that you're not able to scale that much, but you can do something you love with people you build a long-term relationship with. Something that you can't do when you're a big business because you have to serve many.
Yeah, I'm actually just smiling because I think so. Two things. One thing is, I think I'm ruined to ever be employed again because this, what you've just shared, is exactly the experience that I made. That I don't know. I never wanted to be a solopreneur. I never had the plan to start my own business and to be all by myself. But now I know the benefits of it, and I think I will never be able to compromise on that. And the other thing was the scaling part. That was actually a question that was triggered, or that was brought to me as well by Stefan Friedrich. You know him. He's actually, I think he accidentally became my mentor some time ago, who actually also asked me, like, how do you want to scale your business? And for me, this was such a, that was not even a question, because I actually also see the value in what you've just described, and the way that I'm able to now build the relationships and to work individually with everyone, really, like face to face, or I mean, sometimes it's also online, but I think this is something that makes this job, this like working as a coach, supporting people on their journey to find out what it really is that they would like to do, what their path is something that is so individual, and it needs this personal contact. And when he was asking me, like, maybe some online trainings or webinars, and for me it was like, I mean, it was an active decision for me to say no. At least now, right now, this is not what I want. This is not how I see the most value that I can bring to the people I work with. So that, yeah, again, like you were just describing, it's an active decision. It might change over time, but I think it's very important to know the model that works for you and to really be aware of the fact that we take these decisions and that we actively drive them. It's like an active process that is not easy, but it's very important, I think, especially when you start your own business. What do you think?
Yeah, and it's not only about the should you do it or not, left or right. It is also a question of the pace, like the speed in which you want to do it. Do you want to give yourself the time in order to find out whether or not you want to scale? Yeah, once you can max out the one person business until, I guess, 500K a year. Yeah, that is typically like the max of these kinds of business models. And then you're in a very strong position to decide that you want to do it differently, that you want to add more scalable products to your business. But now you have the choice. You don't feel guilted or pressured into the maximum speed of growth possible. And as a growth marketer, that is something that everybody pretty much expects of me. Like, how can we grow the fastest? How can we waste the least amount of time? Yeah, and that's fine for the people who want that. But I'm also starting to this is again something that comes out of having started multiple companies. I love to treasure the journey of each project. Imagine, I don't know if you're in a relationship right now, but imagine
going to... I am married 10 years a few weeks ago.
Congratulations.
So yes. Thank you.
I'm married for 8 years. Now let's look back when we met our spouses, and now having the opportunity to get to know them again, you wouldn't go as fast as possible because you know that you are going to get married and gonna have kids. You would treasure all the little steps of getting to know that person and to learn their quirks. And after several startups, it's very, very similar. Like, yes, I know it's going to be a new phase of my life when I start something big new, which happens to me every 2 to 5 years. And those intervals keep on becoming longer. Yeah, the older I get, the longer those startup cycles are for me. Mm-hmm. Seemingly, yeah, it can change, but it looks like it. And now I'm now absolutely treasuring this process of getting to know the audience, getting to know myself, my skills, my team, my product, taking time to nurture it. Growth marketer is maybe something that people from the outside call me, but for me, from the inside, my model is the growth gardener. I want to be the person that creates the necessary environment for things to grow, for people to grow, for ideas to grow, which are startups essentially. Yeah, those are ideas that are growing, yeah, and that are reaching a broader audience. And that is my job. I'm a gardener, and I'm not gonna scream at my plants and say, grow, plant, grow. Yeah, I'm gonna give it what it needs and see how far it's going to grow. And it's not within me, it's within the plant to decide, yeah, how far it's able to grow, yeah, for the human I'm working with. And that is keeping that perspective in mind more and more. That is my current let's say, like, personal development project, to stay the fuck away from the high pressure, fast scaling startup world and to root myself within being a growth gardener and being fine with that, yeah, being happy with it.
I really like
not
that.
Not always working.
That would have been another question, you know, but I really I like that metaphor, and I think this is very, very important to allow yourself, to give yourself the time to grow yourself into whatever comes next. And this is a very, very interesting experience and kind of an exciting journey, an adventure, if you see it that way. And this is something that, is definitely worth taking the next step without, taking the step after already. So a very nice way you've just put it. And you've just mentioned this is something that you don't manage to do regularly in exactly that way.
Not always. It's like raising kids. You always think like, you're going to be the perfect parents, but then they start screaming and shouting and the world starts coming at you and then you lose the threat, the thought that keeps you to that idea of being a calm and collected growth gardener, right?
Yeah, I can only imagine, I have to say, because I don't have children myself. This was part one of the interview with Ben. The second half you will hear in the next English episode, where Ben will also give us a couple of good insights when it gets to market ourselves out there. Were you actually quite satisfied with the direction you have taken so far, but somehow it doesn't feel right anymore? Or you even believe that there must be more? Let's see how I could support you as a career and life coach and book your free initial consultation. Send me an email to coaching@gina-friedrich.com. I'm looking forward to hear from you.